Hey, this is Jules, and welcome to The Pool Party. I have missed doing regular episodes so much. I took a couple of weeks off of recording the podcast, and there's a good reason for that. I am relishing in the end of summer, but before I really talk about that and what's been going on, I wanted to give you a little bit of an outline for today's episode because it's actually super relevant to what I've been up to, what I've been working on, and what I want to talk about today. If you're new to this podcast, my name is Jules, and on The Pool Party, we talk about design education, how to start a brand, basically bootstrapping and doing it yourself for beginners. In the world of the internet, you can start a brand online. You can make a YouTube channel, a TikTok, and essentially market yourself by yourself. Now, I've been a brander, marketer, and content creator for many years now with a variety of experience in each of these sects. And what I really determined is that I love helping other people. And I think it's great if you have an idea, you have the drive and consistency to get going. I'm here to help you with the elements that are a little bit more in the hands or realm that you would leave to a professional. I'm going to say that very lightly because there's a lot of great free information online these days. But what I'm doing is bringing my years of experience, my tactical mind and strategy, and then also all the hours I spend on the internet today and talking with people to give you basically a brief, a very in the moment lay down of how things are going in the design industry, what I see online, and how things are going in the world of social media. This is relevant because many of the jobs, formal jobs, I've done over the past 4 years since 2020 have been as a production artist for social media agencies. If you have no idea what a social media agency is, they're essentially most of the time these remote companies that are set up online. They function fully remote, and they work with client partners, companies, content creators, and brands all in different capacities to create content for social media channels from scratch. And the goal is to keep audiences engaged. It's to, for lack of a better phrasing, win the internet, to keep making content that keeps people engaged, to understand audiences and mirror back to them what they believe themselves to be. I've never actually phrased it that way before, but that is what's working in the world of the internet these days. People no longer want to see brands marketing in a traditional sense. It's gross, it's tacky, it feels overdone. However, I don't necessarily think that's true for individual content creators. And sometimes people love to see the little guy win. So if you're just starting out, sometimes it helps to know some of these insights on branding, strategy, just to help give you a leg up. Because let's be honest, starting anything by yourself in the beginning is challenging. There's truly just a lot of mental work and thoughts, maybe even your own negativity bias that you have to work against just to start a creative project, be consistent, and keep on going. It's one thing to show up and make a video, for example, one time, but then to keep on doing it, get better, and then grow an audience is another task. That might be the case if you're taking on the endeavor of becoming a content creator or making videos on YouTube, for example. But the same thing applies if you're in the world of blogging, if you're making music, if you put on events. Not everything is the flow in the start. It takes mental work, mental fortitude, and consistency to keep on going. So what I'm doing here on this podcast is essentially serving as a cheerleader to tell you to keep on going. Absolutely, keep on going. And then I'm going to give you some insights. I'm going to give you a little bit of a digest on what I see in the creative world, online, freelancing, etc. And that's what today's episode is going to be about. So today I'm going to talk about passion projects, how I started designing through passion projects, and I'm going to give you some encouragement to start a passion project if that's what you want to do. The second thing is to essentially talk about the pink elephant in the room, which is the state of the design market and the job market, mostly in the United States. But many people I know in their 20s, 30s have been impacted negatively in some form or shape over the past 4 years by layoffs, culture shifts, and maybe you're a designer, you work in the design industry or the tech industry, and you want to keep on going. It's not always easy. I've heard of people who've gone through multiple rounds of layoffs, but I know that's an ugly word to use. The second part of this podcast is going to be about how to deal with uncertainty, how to keep your motivation up, and then piggybacking, yes, off of that subject of passion projects in order to keep the good vibes going, because that's a lot of what this is about, building structure. And so later on in this podcast, we're going to talk about building structure without truly killing your vibe in a 9-to-5 prison type of way. And that's also going to account for some factors that you might need to consider if you are starting a passion project. So that's what today's episode is about. We're going to dive in. And before we start, I just want to let you know that if you go to juliaespero.me, juliaespero.me, I offer key art services for podcasters, musicians, writers, and live events specialists. If you ever need help with your key art, you can hit me up. I'm offering a package on my website at the moment. You can go to my website and look at services. And if you've been looking for a designer to work with, if you are specifically a musician, DJ, podcaster, writer, or live event specialist, please reach out. I would love to work with you. If not, if you want to do this by yourself, by all means, go ahead. I think that's a fantastic idea, and I've created this podcast to essentially help you on your journey. So start from episode one. This is your big brand book and how to do it by yourself. Today, we're getting away from that structure of discussing branding and how to bootstrap, and we're going more into the realm of, okay, you've already started and now you need motivation to keep on going. I'm so excited to dive in with you today on this episode of The Pool Party.
Amazing. Now, as much as I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about my personal design background, we're here to talk about you. I want to start off this segment on passion projects by discussing a story about how I got into making zines, which eventually led to my career in design. But the whole point of my intro is to let you know that it's to essentially discuss that passion projects are your creative playground. I started making zines when I was in college, and back in 2016, maybe even earlier, I was traveling back and forth between San Francisco and Brooklyn, and both of those cities had an independent book fair that I love that I believe still happens today called Printed Matter. And at the Printed Matter book fairs, a bunch of indie publishers and graphic designers would print their own booklets, create posters, and then sell them to people. And these books were like some of the coolest, most visually interesting works I had ever seen in my life. And it really got me thinking about how I, as an independent person, might approach making a zine or something I could pass around as an art project. I later ended up taking a graphic design class at school, but oddly, they didn't really teach graphic design at all in this class. A lot of the time, the professor spent the class talking about his own design projects, a lot of theory. And then this is my beef with a lot of classes at Stanford too. I know I roll whenever I say Stanford, but I promise you the downside of going to a research institution with any curiosity of making projects, especially projects that require like a skill set. Sometimes the downside is that you don't really learn that trade or that specific skill in a really actionable, instructable way. And sometimes professors love to just talk about themselves. And so in this graphic design class, we would get assignments, but we would be told to use Photoshop or Illustrator, but we would be given basically no information on how to use Photoshop or Illustrator.
So at the time, we had a library where I would go to and study, but they would also loan out iPads and Apple Pencils. And it was during this class that I fell in love with Illustrator for Adobe on the iPad. And before I even knew how to design using a lot of the Adobe Photoshop suite, like Illustrator, InDesign, Photoshop, I was basically hand drawing a lot of my work directly onto a tablet using this program that I just taught myself how to use. And it was super easy too, because if you've never used an Apple Pencil and iPad before, you're basically just drawing. You're drawing digitally and it's very easy. That was great for me because I could then create my zine. So I took a format, just a one-page zine, the kind that they used to pass around like in the 1960s, a really easy format. It's one page and then you just cut a slit in the middle and fold it up a certain way. And it's like a mini magazine. But using what I had seen at these printed matter book fairs that I went to and using the tech that I basically got from the library, I was able to make my first graphic design project without knowing really how to use any of the tools. And granted, I was a student at the time, so I had resources that were available to me, but you really gotta just use what you have available to you, especially when you're just starting out, and don't discount any free resource. If you have a friend who will let you borrow an iPad or let you play around on like their Canva subscription, try it out. There's a lot of free resources these days. And that is like my whole spiel with this story. You can use many different tools to create things. And surprise, there's no one right way to do it. If you have good taste, time, and some patience, you can make something pretty amazing with a lot of free tools that you find. And if you really care about your craft and the work you do, a lot of times subscriptions will cost you maybe $30 a month or something. So give yourself some time, plan for that, and it's pretty easy to get off the ground with very little investment. But consider everything you have at first. If you don't have money, then maybe have paper and magazines. If you're a musician, use the tools that you have. You don't need to learn how to produce when you're just starting out. Don't go for the hard thing. Go for what you have and start there. So the whole point of passion projects is that they're meant to be a creative playground. They start from a point of passion where you're genuinely interested in what you decide to pick up. And from there, there are really no rules. There's no one you need to impress but yourself. And that's the magic of this. Dive into what excites you and don't worry about where it might lead. It's all about the fun and the learning process. This is so important, whether you're just starting out or you've been going for many years working on your craft. Eventually, there will be a time where you have to show up. And you might not have a lot of excitement, but you might have a lot of work. And this is why passion projects are so important. You have to find a way to cultivate that interest and then remember why you started or why you are getting started in the first place. It all starts from a place of inspiration. And whatever you create with your artwork and your time is going to inevitably inspire someone else to pursue their passion. That's the beauty of this. Creativity and growth, it's for you. It 100% is. But consequently, you're going to end up inspiring someone else to make something. And I think that's pretty beautiful. So again, when you're making your passion project, there's no one to impress but you. And I think this is a great place to define your passion project from, because if you're working, you know, a lot of times if you have clients or a boss, you need to impress them. And that is going to be the metric by which your work is defined. That isn't always self-fulfilling, but when you decide for yourself to take up a project, even if you're not getting paid, even if the only thing you have to invest is your time, you get to work up the courage to do something that gives you confidence, that reminds you what it means to have fun. And it doesn't really matter what anyone else says. Do you like what you're doing? And I think one of the ways to truly go the distance with a passion project is to just show up for a time to create for fun and commit to that time. I think what this does is it also trains your brain to recognize that sometimes you won't be motivated even for your passions,
Like, sometimes it's scary to create things, to have fun even. Like, our brains are wired to protect us, but that wiring sometimes prevents us from trying new things that might lead to exciting outcomes because we don't even start. One thing I've been working on is saying to my brain, "Thank you, brain, for trying to keep me safe." And then I do the thing anyways. This happens a lot when I sit down to do illustration. I'm really hard on myself, and I think just to give you some context of where I'm at, sometimes I have a really easy time creating in certain mediums, whether that's like my podcasts or designing for work. But then when it comes to like my fun projects and just having a giggle, I for some reason lock up. What I'm working on though is reminding myself that my brain works like a muscle. I've had fun before in the work I've done, and I can find it again. But the best way for me to do that is to really take off the pressure, like basically let no one else judge it but me, and keep on going on a project until I find that like I've had fun, and then that's good enough for me. And I'm gonna encourage you to take up a passion project, especially if you're a creative who's working and you've had a really tough time in this current job market. Shifting over to our next segment, the economy sucks, but you don't have to. Okay, so let's take a little bit of time to talk about the job market for designers and creatives now. I want to be so careful when I say this, the economy sucks, but you don't have to, that whole part, because this isn't some stop being poor type of statement. Even if you have been trying really hard over the past 4 years, many people who are so talented, hardworking, and just like exceptional people have had a hard go of it. And I've explained a few times how I've been laid off over the past couple of years and have basically found that my new jive is working part-time for a few companies and doing design, freelancing. I know there are people out there who are still going through layoffs, and I think what I want to say is I know how that can hurt your confidence and essentially get in the way of your flow, but it's really not about you. You could be literally the most talented, amazing person, and if you're working for a company that just doesn't have their priorities straight or their values aligned, or they fail to plan for their, if they fail to forecast correctly, that has nothing to do with you, and you still might get laid off. So that's what I really mean when I say the economy sucks, but you don't have to. It really has nothing to do with you. If you've had a bad go at the job market and the creative industry over the past 4 years, especially like in a very traditional sense, don't be too hard on yourself. And it can be really scary and frustrating. Trust me, I know. But you might consider taking on something that's less hefty than a full-time corporate job right now, or even a full-time job at an agency. And that doesn't say anything about you. It's just what is working at the moment. And I might be preaching to the choir, but I have a lot of friends, especially people in their 20s and 30s, who have experienced multiple layoffs over the past few years, have maybe been given job offers from companies who then decide not to actually follow through with hiring them, or maybe they've been hired by some awesome new company, but then said awesome new company falls apart in a few months. It happens all the time. And realistically, sometimes it's actually a little bit more stable to take on smaller bites, maybe even get a bridge job, like working part-time somewhere, and then building something you care about on the side. There are definitely still opportunities out there, and I've received contract opportunities even in this job market. I'm personally not even looking for full-time roles in a corporate setting anymore because I got real with myself. I don't really like working those types of jobs. And I'm not the only one in that sentiment, I know. I go on to TikTok every single day and I see recruiters who have been working in the industry for many years, both tech
tech and creative. And I think with the combination of things like the writer's strike in LA, the delayed impact of COVID, a lot of things that were once stable staples are really not that any longer. I follow some producers online, and what they're saying about Hollywood and LA, for example, right now, is that Hollywood is the new blockbuster. And basically what they mean by that is like blockbuster doesn't exist anymore. Everyone streams online. People go on TikTok and that's how they get their entertainment. And before we had things like Netflix, we used to go to Blockbuster and get our VHS tapes and even our DVDs and Blu-rays. But obviously that's not a thing anymore. So times are changing, if you haven't noticed already. And sometimes the job market responds a little bit delayed. A lot of things are going online, and it's probably no wonder that my jobs as a professional designer have been in social media and online content creation over the past 4 years. Hardly anyone hires me for print projects or posters anymore. I love those types of projects, but oftentimes posters, print projects, those are like the indie projects that people hold as their babies. Those are the projects you save up for just to self-fund, because nobody genuinely, it's just not the type of environment or time anymore where these are the projects that are in abundance. You let me know if I'm explaining that correctly, but what I'm trying to say is that I know it can be a lot to accept over the course of 4 years that the industry totally changed, especially if you haven't been in it or you've been on the periphery, but it truly has. And I think we need to like radically accept that things are the way that they are. And sure, we can mourn, but also now that we know this, what do we want to do next? What do we want to do instead? Maybe you're not feeling the pressure or you haven't been impacted by all this. In that case, consider yourself lucky. But if not, hopefully this little snippet, this little touch base kind of gives you an insight of what many ordinary people without connections are dealing with in today's job market. Even still, I truly believe that it's cliche, but it's true. Persistence and continuous effort are the key to finding opportunities. And you can put this same persistence and continuous effort into your passion projects. And who knows, your passion project might get you another job, or it could potentially become your job. There have been many projects over the years that I've dedicated my time to as if it's a part-time job. And if it didn't become another way of making revenue for me, it became a very staple piece of my portfolio that I used to then get other jobs from different employers. And that's why I recommend this, because it's a tried and true method. And I wouldn't really be saying this for any other reason. Basically, as things are crumbling around you, like this old economic system, this old way of doing things, find things that you like to do that you could handle doing consistently, and show up for yourself. Show up for that time. Do what you have to do in order to make your money, create that stability, and then carve out some time where you can play and have fun, because that is essential. That is what dreams are made out of. And there's no way around that. Genuinely ask yourself, if you are living your dreams, would you be doing stuff that you don't like? Would you be doing things very quickly and rushing and doing them consistently? No, right? So what I found over the years is that the only way to make your dreams come true is to essentially use the time that you have now, anytime, whether that's 15 minutes, 30 minutes, and investing that towards something you love. And then over time, what happens is you allow that time to grow, and before you know it, what was once a dream becomes your reality. It's simple, but it's not easy. It really is that simple. This is especially true if maybe you're making a stable income from something that is like a full-time job to you, or a few part-time jobs, and you don't want to disrupt your stability. I'm sure you still have 30 minutes here and there that you could train yourself to use towards creating and doing something that you love. I think this takes mental effort and discipline to build up to. I know, not fun sounding, but you can genuinely just remind yourself of what kind of life you're wanting to live and what you want to build, and then remind yourself of that as you go into your bubble of creation, and eventually that bubble, that time slot you have for your creative fun time will grow. It's keeping that faith and knowing you can make that for yourself.
All right. Up next, we want to talk about building structure without killing the vibe. And I think the perfect segue into discussing this topic is a TikTok I literally just saw where this Gen Zer says that she was explaining to her older sister how she just got a job, and her older sister said to her, "Congratulations, but don't forget about your other goals." Yeah, so that's how it feels sometimes, I think, especially when you have a corporate job. And even if you happen to get a job where you're lucky enough to use your creativity and your skills in a way that builds some sort of creative identity, maybe not even for you, but for other people. I don't mean to scare anyone, and I hate the phrase adulting. I left a therapist once because they would not stop saying learning to adult, because I just think that's ridiculous. I think learning about how to deal with your finances and balance is one thing, but learning to adult is just like one of those ridiculous phrases that means nothing. It's like a nothing phrase, because a lot of ways that people make money are basically made up, and reality is you can either handle it and it jives with your working style and your brain and all the other things that you want to achieve in life, or it doesn't. It doesn't work for everyone. Like I mentioned before, you might already be working a job, and then the way that you build your creative empire is, let's not call it a creative empire, the way you build your creative bubble is on the side. I think if you ever did extracurricular activities as a kid, like ballet, sports, I was a dancer when I was growing up. Tuesdays, 8 p.m., Wednesdays, 8 p.m., I would go to dance classes. Sometimes I would be in the studio, depending on how old I was, for 4 hours in the evening just to dance. And for me, that was fun. I wasn't doing it for money, but I set a goal for myself every single week to get better at that skill just because I was enjoying it. And I think that's exactly the type of energy we need to be tapping into when we're pursuing something we love. This is not like a side hustle. And I think if you approach every passion project you have as a side hustle from the get-go, it's gonna drain you, and it's also gonna be really hard to feel passion from it. And I just have to say, as a person who has made the mistake of turning a lot of passions into a side hustle, and also sometimes seeing my friends do that, it's draining. It's not fun to experience, it's not fun to be around, it has the opposite effect. So rather than trying to do that right away, just start from a place of having fun, and know that if you truly want to stick with this, and if you do, a way will be made. That's the element of faith. Some people, myself included, even hire coaches for specific career paths they want to forge. And you can do that eventually, but until you have the capital to work on that, to put in the time, until you have the strong enough belief to know that it's going to happen, there's no shame in setting even smaller goals, exploring part-time gigs, giving yourself like 30 minutes every single day just to dream. Let's start there. I want to tell you a story about my dad, who is retired now. And he does not have to worry about finances, but he has a ton of time on his hands and also a really flourishing garden. And he loves watching garden YouTube. Recently, he's been on a journey to create his own gardening YouTube channel. I think he's the perfect example of someone who just needs to get started. And honestly, this is a bit of a side narrative, but if you had a retired parent who has a lot of time, they're the perfect type of person to pursue a creative outlet. They don't even have to monetize it, but something to think about, okay? I highly recommend it. Even now, as a creative person who does this for my job, I freelance, I work part-time in-house or in different capacities. I do what feels good in the moment. I still pursue passion projects. I take classes on how to improve my drawing and my design skills. Sometimes I see new techniques other people use, and I want to learn how to do that. For me, that helps me maintain the beginner's mindset. It helps me remember that not everything is easy at first. And then sometimes it gets more fun when you get further along the way. Passion projects can be fun, and some people have the goal of eventually getting paid to do what they love. That might be you. Who doesn't want that? But just keep in mind that not everything happens overnight. It really does take time to grow. And I've been hearing this a lot lately, but it really is true in that sometimes we can get such instant gratification from swiping on our phones, getting the dopamine. But there is something about creating that is a little bit more like going to the gym, where sometimes it's not fun at first. Sometimes it sucks. Maybe there's some like thoughts in there, wow, I should have gotten into the gym like a while back. And it can be hard to break through that wall. But once you do, it's quite fun. It's motivating. Like seeing the progress itself is the motivator. That's something to consider. Next thing you might want to think about is flexibility and keeping the creativity flowing. Balance is maybe a myth or an abstraction, and I think that there are ways that you can actively be working towards goals and then actively resting. Everyone is different. I've known people who work in bursts where maybe they're on tour for a month and a half because they're a dancer, or 5 days out of the week they're working at night because they're performers, they're musicians, and then the rest of the week they're sleeping in until 2 p.m. Balance might not always look like a 9-to-5 sort of balance, but one thing that I found really helps me is getting real with what feels good in my body, trying to create a repeat pattern that truly helps me feel good, rested, nourished. And then taking care of my body on a daily basis, but also finding cycles throughout the week and the month where I can get appointments in, like going to the doctor, going to the gym, maybe interspersing that exercise and taking care of my body in ways that aren't super structured, but integrated into my life. And I think this is also another component of creativity and passion projects that is really important. I've had moments in my life where genuinely I was probably going through a manic episode where I worked really hard on passion projects to almost a detriment, where I wasn't taking care of myself or my body as much as I was taking care of my artwork. And one of the things that I had to shift as someone who uses my brain a lot is that my body and my health is like an art practice in itself. And you might relate to this if you're a creative person, but I've noticed this sometimes that highly passionate individuals, whether they're academics or very driven, sometimes people prioritize habits and routines around work and creating over maintaining the body and certain necessary biological cycles. What does that mean? Most women really need 10 hours of sleep a night. I'm sure you've heard that most men need around 8 hours of sleep a night. I genuinely feel that your body cannot really handle sleeping less than 6 hours a night for months on end. And you will probably go through some period of, you will probably go through some period of having to recover, if not face sickness, if you don't take care of your body. That's the simplest way I can describe it. And then dealing with sickness is a whole other thing. I think just to get ahead of that, as you pursue your creativity, also pursue a way of maintaining longevity. And I don't really think that any creative project comes at the cost of health. Something to think about. I want to tell you another story about my senior year of college when I was about to graduate. And I didn't have a job lined up yet, but it was about winter to spring, maybe like February. And at the time, I was actually working at the art library on campus. And I love the art library because it was this beautiful building and had a lot of amazing books on photographers, fashion designers, graphic designers. And so my job was being an art librarian, where I would check people's books back in, reshelve the books, and keep things orderly and organized. But in my free time or after I got off work, I would get a bunch of books on different topics. And sometimes I would go through these like sleepless weekends of writing papers for other classes. And I would do it at the art library. But basically what this did was impact my mental health in a way. I wasn't really sleeping a ton or eating super well. But I suppose you could say one of the good parts of this little manic episode was that I would get library books at the time that were only one type of color, and you can call that whatever you want, but would have these phases of liking certain colors. For example, just to really tell you about like how deep this almost obsessive compulsion towards colors went, I would go through seasons where I was really interested in the color green, and then I dyed my hair forest green. I would take all these photos of things that were green, like plants, and in the winter when it was colder, then my hair would change to blue. And I would continue this obsession with blue. And then come spring, my hair was like faded and back to blonde. But then I developed this obsession with the color orange and yellow. And so as I was going through the art library, I would grab books that were only binded with this really distinct sunflower yellow. And I got two books at the time, one about the canon of work from Jean-Michel Basquiat and also Keith Haring. And Keith Haring and Jean-Michel Basquiat were two notorious street artists who were really popular during the late 1980s to early 1990s in New York City. And they both died young for a variety of reasons, sickness, AIDS in the case of Keith Haring, or drug overdose with Jean-Michel Basquiat. And I don't romanticize early deaths of brilliant artists, but I think I was obsessed with this idea of what made them rise to fame so quickly and then also meet an early demise. And I do think there's a certain darkness that comes with this romanticization of throwing your whole life into artwork and producing. For example, I am going to paraphrase, but from what I remember about Jean-Michel Basquiat's life towards the end, he had a very wealthy sponsor, I think who was an older white woman, who essentially gave him a space in Soho to make his paintings. And what he would do all day, all night was make his paintings and then also abused drugs, mostly like opioids and heroin. I think as an adult, someone who is in my late 20s, what I know about Jean-Michel Basquiat is that he did not make it to an old age. And it honestly makes me really sad to hear about these stories of young artists of color, queer artists, get taken advantage of by older people who essentially see an opportunity for this young artist to make a lot of money and become a massive success overnight. And then genuinely, it costs these young people their lives. And I think the more I've learned about pop culture and art, not just in that particular decade of the United States, but even earlier, like in the 1960s to 70s, I read Just Kids by Patti Smith that same senior year. And there's a lot of romanticization, I think, that other people project upon Patti's life. And she was a woman who got pregnant at a really young age and then ended up having to put up her baby for adoption and then moved to New York by herself. But she fell in love with a queer artist, and then they lived life together, essentially very poor and like always on drugs in New York. But they basically faced major health problems and also just trying to live life, not really having stable income while being in New York. And that was also a time where I feel like you could probably have gotten an apartment for $100 or something. That's like unheard of in today's economic terms. But if that life was hard, I think sometimes what I worry about is that there are a lot of young people who romanticize this idea of moving to New York and being young, broke artists. And the stakes are actually way higher these days. And it's not just New York, it's a lot of major cities around the US. People work really hard to get in creative careers, and even the most talented people have a hard time at it sometimes. And that's not to discourage you from pursuing a creative career, but it is to discourage you, if you are a young person, from romanticizing this idea of being a young, broke artist. There is a reason why that is a trope, and I think it's because sometimes older, wealthier people who know better truly exploit young and talented people. And this is why I always encourage people to pursue their passions on their own if they want to have a creative career. Because this idea of like sponsorship, of sponsoring like a young strappy talent, has been around basically forever. And the fortunate thing about being in the year 2024 is that you can, in the safety of your own home or your hometown, pursue your creative talents by just putting aside some time and then consistently posting online in order to vet people who want to work with you, who might be able to help you. And there's no rush. There's truly no rush going the slow route, especially if you are a young person in your early 20s. And there's only a lot of benefit to taking the time to mature and develop and maybe even get like a part-time job in a few different industries. And I'm not saying you have to work restaurant jobs. I think, you know, that's also another trope that we saw in the early 2000s of artists moving to cities like New York or LA and then working in restaurants while they were auditioning or trying to learn their craft. There's merit in that, sure, but it's not necessarily that's the blueprint and that's what you have to do. That's why I think challenge yourself to be creative and find what works for you, but in the sense that you can do it with the most amount of ease for you and also consistency and discipline. Because at the end of the day, a lot of this is work. When you're making money too, we're talking about contracts and deals, we're talking about like legal agreements in exchange for money, or we're talking about informal trades, and there's a cost benefit analysis to be done between those two things. And I just want to throw that on your radar, especially if you are a young person trying to break into the industry, because a lot of people will not put it that simply in those terms, but that's what it is. All right, folks, so let's get back to the topic of passion projects. And maybe I shared an extreme example of what happens when people capitalize too hard on their art. But I think this all goes to say that this is why it's important to create from a place where you truly love what you're doing. And I think passion projects can help keep you on course and also remind you of why it's fun to do the work that you're doing. Passion projects can be your secret weapon, letting you experiment, make mistakes, and figure out what you really love doing. You can learn new skills and eventually get paid to do what you love. And from there on, it's essentially a never-ending cycle of learning and growing. Remember to keep it flexible and light in order to keep your creativity flowing. It's so important to stay flexible enough to follow new ideas and opportunities. In this podcast, I talk a lot about exercises like mood boarding and staying connected with other creatives in order to keep the inspiration coming from other sources that aren't just online. It's important to take baby steps and then also recognize that this isn't the type of work that you get done in a week and are just simply done with. This is life's work, and I think that if you're doing it correctly, you'll leave enough time to truly take in life outside of putting your nose to the grindstone and just producing to produce. So in conclusion, I want to hear if you've started any passion projects that you love that have helped you learn a new skill, what they entailed, and if they helped you get new work, or if it's just a fun hobby that you do in your free time. I personally love seeing and hearing about other people's passion projects, and sometimes I'm more inclined to listen and give them my attention just because I want to hold space for things that people truly care about and not get bogged down by the type of content and work that is made just to essentially fill a void. If you're experiencing the current job market for art and creativity or design, keep on going. Perseverance is key, and maybe also take a step back. Designing and creating art for a full-time living isn't everything. I know that might be hard to hear, especially if you've been looking for a full-time role, but if things are going to change, if careers are restructuring and the landscape is shifting, it's honestly, in my opinion, worth it to wait for things to settle a bit and then jump in during a time where there's a bit more enthusiasm. I think one thing that people fail to mention at times during hard times is that a job, while it's great and is a way of making money, it can be just that, and it doesn't have to really accomplish all the things for you. And I think that's why I wanted to to talk so much about carving out space to do the things that you really love so that you can hone in on that purity of enjoyment and love and not ask a single position to fulfill all your human needs. Anyways, thank you everyone for hanging out today. And in the next episode, I will be interviewing my friend Marlon, who is a designer living in LA, and he started his career as a graphic designer during the pandemic. Previously, he was a product designer, and I'm going to ask him a bit about how he feels about being online these days, and we're going to chat about finding inspiration out in the world. So I hope to see you around next week for that episode. Please subscribe and follow The Pool Party, rate it wherever you listen to podcasts, and if it inspired you today, please share it with a friend. My name is Jules, and you can find my work at juliaespero.me. That's JULIAESPERO.me. I'll see you next time.